This episode of Film Sack is brought to you in part by some help from riseandfight.net. The original web series, Lynchfield Stops, the story of an ordinary delivery driver caught in a not-so-ordinary zombie apocalypse. Check it out at thelynchfieldstops.com and the extras at riseandfight.net.
We need a translator to tell him we need a translator.
How dare you talk to me that way?
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This happens to be Film Sack, episode 108, and we continue to mine the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind and for you. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me tonight, Brian Chin Dimple Dunaway.
Oh, thank you. Hello. Yes, Mr. Russell. Hi, my name is Don Taylor, and we have an idea for a movie we'd like you to star in. Us about... Oh, you would? Well, that's very nice, but can I tell you what the movie's about before you say yes? Okay, well, it's about two aging gunfighters that... No, there's no time travel in this movie. So you're out then? Wow. Okay, well, yes, there is some time travel in this movie. Yes, and an aircraft carrier. Sure, why not? I'm going straight to hell and directing TV movies after this.
All right.
I like that you go straight to hell first.
Yeah, you do go straight to hell. You must go through the gates of hell to do direct-to-TV, certainly in the 80s. Also with us, Randy Flare Gun Robert Jordan.
I am so excited this week. Aloha, Scott, Brian. I am excited because we are watching this week, we're watching an Emilio Estevez film, not called The Breakfast Club, not called St. Elmo's Fire, not Repo Man, not Mighty Ducks, not Maximum Overdrive, not Bobby, not Young Guns, not Outsiders, not Free Jack, and not Emilio Estevez.
Oh, right. I look a lot like him, though.
Correct. Well, gee,
glasses
I wonder
off,
why.
I'm Emilio Estevez. Glasses on, I'm Charlie Sheen. Yep. Glasses right, on, right. Glasses on.
And if you listen closely, I'm that dude in Mass Effect. So, yep, he's got it all covered. Also rounding us out today, Brian, the old Sheen is the cool Sheen Ibbot.
Here's a question. What if you had the chance to go back in time and change history? Wait, that's not what I meant. What if you had the chance to go back in time and think about changing history for a couple hours? I guess you could actually do that now without having to go back in time. Here's a question. Do you like dogs?
All right, you win tonight. You win. That's right. Pretty good.
Full of win.
Movie we're talking about is called The Final Countdown. Not The Final Countdown, that song that came later in the 80s that some of us think is okay. A lot of people think is a real anthem for generation, and I think is a piece of crap. I don't like that.
Thanks for clearing up that confusion, because there are a lot of people who tuned in after listening to that song thinking, wow, how are they going to film sack that one?
Now, the funny thing
is... It was a really short movie. It was only 5 minutes. It was on YouTube.
Yeah, it was pretty short. The Final Countdown is not a movie I'd heard of. I said this last week. I didn't know this existed.
I had no
idea. A lot of people online, though, when we said we were going to watch it, go, ooh, I loved that when I was a kid, or I loved that when I was a young adult, and it was great, and I'm so glad you're covering it. And I thought, man, it just completely missed it. And this would have been around the, you know, Time Bandits time for me. I mean, let's see, 1980 would have been, I would have been 10.
Just four scant years of the incredible 1984, all the great films that came out then. Just,
oh, that's weird to think about. Yeah. Yeah, that was, 84 was, oh, geez, we talked about this once, but 84 was the, was things like,
everything.
Everything. Yeah, everything came out in 84. Everything of any worth.
Everything that came out in 84 definitely came out in 84.
That's true. That was true. It was a big year for movies. But this was just, I don't know, I just never even heard of it. And I don't want to say it was under my radar, because that sounds like I'm trying to make some sort of connected euphemism to the film.
But. I never heard of it either, which was amazing, because since I've seen this movie, I'm like, wow, you know what? This is actually put together pretty good.
Yeah, it's I'll say before we play Fletcher, a huge surprise for me in the affirmative. I really liked it. I thought it was really enjoyable.
Can I give you my overall summary that came into my head during this film?
Sure.
This film is Michael Bay 15 years before Michael Bay.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. Maybe a little, I don't know. I think it out Tony Scotted Tony Scott and the fighter stuff. I thought the military video was really good.
But for 1980, I mean, you know, like if Michael Bay or Tony Scott had been trapped in 1980 with the equipment and the experience that these filmmakers had, I was surprised is what I'm saying. There was so much great war porn in this film that when you think of great war porn, you really think it starts up in the late 80s and really gets going in the 90s. And this is like 10 years before its time. Mm-hmm.
Mm. When I think of great war porn, I think of Saving Ryan's Privates, but
an actual war porn. Yeah. That exists, you know. That
it's funny you use the term war porn because I felt like this was all of the sex, but no money shot, no finish, no completion. It's like you get. Well, we'll talk about this more in the show, but it just feels like it was such a watered down ending for what it could have been.
Yeah, it was. And did you guys notice? I don't mean to jump this far ahead this quickly, but it just hit me. Did you notice that the very end of this film is basically the very end of Crimson Tide? With Gene Hackman with the dog everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dog. True. There's a little dog involved. They're both dressed in their Navy freaking fancies, and they're walking off the ship talking after the big ordeal. It's not exactly the same ordeal, nor is it the same kind of dog, but that whole scene.
By the way, I want me a dedicated typing dog because, I mean, that was uncomfortable scene when they introduced the dog because he did not look natural at all. You could tell he was watching somebody off screen the whole time.
Oh,
like,
yeah, right, yeah.
Okay, sit real still, Lassie. Real still.
Now stare over at Bob and bark like crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It's a little bit weird. But let's get into some Fletcherisms here. This is Scott Fletcher's take on describing this film. Again, it is the film, The Final Countdown. And before we get too far, I want to play this because I didn't even know where to put this. I think I was going to kind of play this before I said anything today. Then I thought, well, maybe I'll put it in post. But I decided, you know what, I'm going to play it now. And then we'll play the actual Fletcher intro. But check this out. This is Scott Fletcher, some of his best work, pulled right out of his A. I don't know what he was thinking. But here's a preview of about what we're about to do.
Coming up this week on FilmSack. The Final Countdown. The countdown to end all countdowns. It's right there in the name. The movie that asks, what would happen if a modern aircraft carrier went back to Pearl Harbor? Featuring Spartacus and Daddy Tiger Blood. Don't miss it. Visit filmsack.com. I am Spartacus, and I am winning.
All right.
Love it.
So, that's awesome.
Now, he did it for next week, too, so I'm going to think I had a better position. Maybe I'll play it at the top of the show. I don't know. But Scott Fletcher, man.
Oh, I think that belongs like in, you know, TMS and The Instance and in
everywhere else. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It belongs in the brains and minds of listeners everywhere. So we'll see what we can do about that. But here is his official description of the film, The Final Countdown.
The Final Countdown. What if a 1980s American aircraft carrier, with its modern firepower, time-warped back to Pacific waters just outside Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941? That's the intriguing premise behind the sci-fi adventure that stars Kirk Douglas and Martin Sheen.
All right. See? Proper there. That's just a proper damn description right there.
I like it.
All right. So it's the Final Countdown. We've mentioned the cast a bunch of times. Directed by Don Taylor, who, you know, Brian Dunaway's not wrong, is basically a TV dude.
Yeah, poor guy.
Yeah, he had some other stuff, but that, you know, not known for much else. Yeah. We'll get into that in a minute. But it is the main characters, the main stars in this are Kirk Douglas, who really wanted his son Michael Douglas in the film. He couldn't do it because he was in the middle of that Andromeda strain or whatever the hell it was he was working on.
Oh, yeah.
Something else. I forgot the thing. We'll get to that in a minute.
And this is Kirk Douglas... old, like he's old in this film, which is did you realize he is 95 years old right now?
He's still alive, right?
Yes. Okay. Kirk Douglas is alive and 95.
Yeah. They're kicking him alive.
Well, he was
probably still kick my ass.
Right?
Well, he was on, so how many years was it? 2 years ago he was on the Oscars and he was
out in the Oscars. I thought it was last year that he came out and he and somebody was trying to talk over him. He came out with somebody, or maybe no, he came out alone.
Yeah.
And did the introduction for, something
like that. But I remember, right. I remember people were kind of they were split. On the one hand, they thought, "Oh man, we've brought out a man, and clearly the stage of dementia that we shouldn't be dragging him out on stage with."
Right.
And then other people were like, "No, let him kick ass. He deserves it, and he's you know, that was funny." And I was kind of caught between the two. I wasn't really sure what to think as an observer. But
it was last year, and it was funny. Yeah. It was funny.
Yeah,
he came out and told jokes, and 94-year-old telling jokes. What could be better?
Right. You could hardly understand him though. Like he's got like super stroke on the one side or whatever, and so you could barely understand what he was saying.
His denture cream's not holding too good.
Right,
the teeth are falling down and clamping. By the way, if you want proof that your ears grow forever, look at Kirk Douglas's ears.
Yeah,
that's true.
But I would like to be, I would like to live to be 95 and have that much hair. I think he's amazing.
Yeah. And it's, he's got a face and a thing about him that's really interesting. Yeah. And this was a very sort of, I'm in charge and I'm kind of like dad of this ship kind of role. It's not his usual, I don't know if the word snarky is the right word, but he usually plays kind of a snarky, smirky kind of character. And this was different. This was a warm sort of, man, I'm glad you're in charge because the whole ship just went through a time travel special effect that looked terrible. What are we going to do? I'm glad you're here kind of guy.
And you know? I loved the whole philosophy that the character had in this movie, which was that, you know what? I'm obeying orders. I'm still a military man. So we didn't have to deal with all that crap of, is it right? Is it wrong? Shut up. Let's make a movie.
Shut up. Martin Sheen, first appearance on Film Sack. Just want to make mention of that. Hasn't been on here before. Neither of his other son, Charlie, but we have seen Emilio in Breakfast Club. And one other thing. What was the one with Mick Jagger we saw? Oh,
Free Jack.
Yeah, Free Jack. We saw that.
I don't know, but I'm so sick of this hip-hop term swagger because the only thing it rhymes with is Mick Jagger. And if I don't stop saying his name, I'm going to freak out.
For the longest time, me and my kids thought, I need to move my jacket. That's what we thought the lyrics were.
Yeah, right.
It's like we're in a restaurant and it's filling up. I don't remember where I put it. I think my keys are in it. Oh, that's bad. You better move your jacket. Like that. That's what we thought it was. And Catherine Ross, our second appearance, second appearance. She was in The Swarm.
And looking fantastic, may I say.
She's pretty.
When they pulled her out of the ocean, she was not more than pretty. She was a fit woman.
Yeah,
Before they suddenly are showing us a pleasure boat with some people on it, I was prepared for this film to have no females. I went into this thing with no preparation. I just sat down and started watching the movie. And after about 10, 15 minutes, I thought, you know, this movie may not have any girls. And it would be the first since The Thing? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But no, they crammed her right in there. And
you're right.
And
she's the only one. Mm-hmm. Unless you look under the skirt of Charles Durning, or his name? Durning. Is it Charles Durning?
Charles Durning.
Durning. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. That guy.
He who controls the spice controls the universe.
Yeah. I have stuff to say about him because I think that he is a really unique actor in the sense that I never feel like he is aged. Like he had, and I don't mean even that he was ever young. I mean that he is stuck at about, I don't know, 52 and never looks older than that and never looks younger than that, no matter how old or how far back I go into film.
I agree.
It's weird. I've seen him recently. We watched Old Brother Where Art Thou the other day. Looks the same age to me. And that's like, what, 10 years ago?
Hmm. Yep.
So he's weird. I feel like he's signed some deal with the devil or something.
Totally. And you know, if you saw him walking down the street, you wouldn't give him a second look because he looks so every man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he does. And he's good. I like him, you know? He's good. Yeah. He there's some times where I hate his character because I kind of did in this. And when he's all walking around in a freaking robe trying to steal flare guns, it's just
he has been permanently fixed for me as his character in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
So I
see the instant I saw him on that boat, I'm like, is you ain't my constituency. And that's all I've got. Like the rest of the movie. And I'm glad he was playing a crazy politician. Yeah. Because it fit that role perfectly.
He's also the Hudsucker guy that jumped off the table in the Hudsucker proxy and jumped down to his death and showed up later as an angel. And that's a great movie, by the way. If you've not seen the Coen Brothers Hudsucker proxy, it's probably because somebody said to you, "Oh, I didn't like it. It wasn't like their normal movies." You're missing freaking out. It is an awesome, weird
ass
thing.
One of my favorite things Tim Robbins ever done.
Yeah.
Has ever done.
Yeah,
absolutely.
One of my favorite things he ever done too.
I'm kind of getting with the Coen brothers to where if you just go backwards in time, yeah. they get better for me.
Oh yeah, I for the first time ever saw Blood Simple. Yeah, Blood Simple.
Yeah,
their first movie or their first theatrical movie, mm-hmm. and it's great. It's really good. And holds up, and Nick Tortelli's in it, and there's lots of things to like about it. And it's just, it's interesting that you think that you're going to go back and go, oh, I don't know about Miller's Crossing. This looks like they made this in the 70s. And then you watch it and go, ooh, Miller's Crossing is awesome. I like it all. So whatever they do is fine with me. But even the stuff people don't like, I think is great.
And I'm not saying that I don't think that True Grit's a great movie or A Serious Man is a great movie or No Country for Old Men. There's just something about going backwards through their list and you start getting back to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou and Big Lebowski and Fargo and so forth, Raising Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's the fact that their movies are so timeless that you can, you know, 10 years from now, you'll look back on No Country for Old Men, True Grit, and say, oh, yeah, that was a good movie, too. You know, like, it's something that stays with you and kind of distills over time.
And it also doesn't seem to age. Like, it's a weird thing to watch.
Right.
To watch somebody tell, you know, Nick Cage that, boy, you got a panty on your head. And have that hold up and look good and not feel like it was ripped out of time. You know,
yeah, for the most part their films have a specific like a time of their own, yeah. as opposed to being, all right, this one takes place in the 80s, this one takes place in the 70s. It's you know, and it's a weird amalgamation of 60s and 70s and 80s stuff. Raising Arizona is a great example of that, because you look at the visuals of that film feel like they could have been pulled from everywhere.
Yeah and, like not it's like a Wes Anderson movie in a way.
Specific. Yeah
that's
right.
True. Well, too bad they didn't direct this. Don Taylor
did. They
would
have been like in high school or something.
But I'll say it again, though. Like, okay, so it was filmed in the Atlantic, not the Pacific Ocean where it takes place. That's one thing. But the USS Nimitz was an Atlantic fleet ship in the summer of 87. And when it was transferred to the Pacific, USS Kitty Hawk CV-63 stood in for the Nimitz for the arrival past the Arizona into Pearl Harbor. So there's a lot of mixing stuff up, but I still maintain that the military side of it and what they showed of the fighter jets and the fight with the Japanese dudes and all that stuff, really not just good, but just incredibly authentic. This isn't stock footage. It's not miniatures with wires hanging off of them.
I spent the whole movie looking for stock footage. There were two miniatures.
Oh, that's true.
When they crashed those Zeros.
Yeah, that's true. They looked pretty good.
They looked okay, but they were kind of small. They didn't make big waves, you know.
Yeah, they broke apart like they're made out of some kids.
Also would.
Yeah. That's a good comparison.
But the Zeros themselves that they showed, and a lot of that was runway stuff where they get down low and point the camera up at the pilot and just kind of shake the camera a little bit.
Sure.
But those things look great. Like they went to, you know, the Commemorative Air Force or whatever and got the real deal. With those.
Yeah, and they weren't messing around, and that was great because it lent a certain authenticity that was constantly being lost by that horrible time travel special effect that looked like I made it.
What? No, this was fantastic. For 1980, this was like, shut up.
Really, the silhouette with the water swishing around?
That worked perfect.
I would say that the special effects for that thing, the time tunnel, far better the second time you see it than the first time. And I don't know what it is between... You know, what they figured out.
Because you started to believe.
Is that what it is?
Scott just hammered out the first trope.
Did I?
Yeah.
I accidentally smacked it right in the face.
Vortex?
Hold on. I'm trying to find that thing while I delay with words. Here we go. What did I do?
This is the – we had this with Life Force, and that would be the most interesting thing in the film, the most necessarily needing to be explained thing in the film, not explained at all.
Oh yeah,
not even a little bit. There's not even a somebody hears on the radio that there were significant sunspots today or whatever. Nothing. It's just they fall into this thing and they figure out what's happened to them and just we're gonna just carry on. That's it.
Yes,
okay. Here's what I
thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna say that I actually agree with Brian. I really like the no description. I like that it's an anomaly that we don't need a bunch of backstory
of God,
on.
You have no idea
or whatever. It doesn't matter to me where it came from. It just happened and now it's about what do we do in the face of it. You know what and I had a weird premonition the whole time about District 9 for some reason. It kept coming into my head. And I think what it was this District 9 does this thing where it makes this big assumption.
Yeah.
Aliens brought this ship here. They're all super sick and they can't take off again. They're stuck here. We're putting them in camps. There's upheaval. People are pissed. It's now become the big racism. You know, all of that stuff is like this assumed thing. And they never explain jack poo about it, but they just now tell us a story about it. I feel like I kept feeling like that movie in this movie, and it was weird because it's so out of time compared to it. It's so not related in terms of alien this and that, but it just had a tone to it that made me go, this is like District 9. It was a really weird sensation for me.
And District 9's another one I loved in Life Force, this trope, where, you know, we got some space vampires here. Where they come from, we're not saying. What do you think they're about? I'm not going to tell you. Well, okay, so they're just going to basically come to Earth and start wreaking havoc? Exactly. Like, that's the
Well,
the
and
thing
be naked.
Here. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The thing here, we fall into this thing, and it really, as a trope, it's really difficult for filmmakers, I'm sure. You know, like, you got some nuts. You got some big balls thrown out there to go with this and not even try to explain. That's amazing.
Yeah. You're right. It seems like it would be a hard movie to get past the suits. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a science fiction film where none of the sci-fi is at all explored.
Yeah, that's true.
Got this great idea for a film. This ship travels back in time. Da, da, da. Oh, okay. How's it travel back in time? Not important.
Yeah,
don't
pay attention. Okay, so.
See this guy hand waving? No, don't worry about that. We won't even mention it.
Yeah, but how are you going to show it? Well, we're just going to use construction paper and a freaking plastic bag. But don't worry about that. We got this all figured out. Yeah, I was happy to be past the special effects and get to the meat of the story, because to me it's an interesting thing that I wouldn't mind see being revisited a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with them finding the anomaly somehow through complete happenstance and leaving again.
What does the final countdown have to do with anything,
though? Nothing. I was curious
about the movie title, because I was usually there's an epiphany during the movie sometime. You go, oh, the final countdown.
Or someone will even say it. No one ever said it.
No one said it.
Yeah,
no,
it's waiting for Martin Sheen go, this is what we call the final countdown.
Until the Japanese attack Pearl Harbor.
I think that's what it was, yeah.
Or, you know, usually it refers to the doomsday clock, you know, and when the bomb is going to get dropped and that kind of stuff. And they referenced the possibility that it could have been a nuclear bomb or something that could have happened during this time. But they really never approached it.
I think Ibbot's probably right. It's just to refer. I think the song has ruined us. I think the song makes us look for something else. It really does. I kept doing that. Because the whole time I would look at the title, I'm like, ugh, it's like that song. I mean, they stole it. They took the meaning when that song came out. They stole it and they kept it. And you cannot do words Final Countdown again and never, not think of that song. It's impossible.
I was just waiting for Job to come out and do some magic.
Right.
Exactly. I don't even have the actual original song because I really don't like it, but I have a couple of covers that Brian gave me. So the Lucky Uke one and some other one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got it if you want me to play any of it.
All right. Well, look for the appropriate moment, and damn it, we're going to have some final countdown right here. Let's see. I got some other stuff here. The grand finale where Lasky, this was the name of Martin Sheen's character,
right,
is invited into the limo and drives away from the ship, was filmed at Nimitz home port of Norfolk, Virginia. The best part about this is the way the limo is pointed and the way it drives off. It's headed straight to the end of Pier 12.
Well, yeah, and it didn't.
Where
it
we're
didn't
going, look, we don't need roads.
It didn't look much like Hawaii, that last scene either. They had a couple of scenes that looked enough like Hawaii. They filmed them in the Florida Keys, a few scenes to kind of give you too much white sand. There's not that much white sand in Hawaii.
Yeah, the only Hawaii bits really were the memorial stuff where they did some
filming at Pearl, which was really good. It was kind of cool. Like, you can go to Pearl Harbor today and it still looks pretty much the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't changed much. It's that weird freaky. That weird white memorial design. It's weird. I think it's weird.
Really? You don't like that?
It's okay.
Squished loaf of bread?
Yeah.
A squished loaf.
Yeah, like a weird, like a, I don't know, like a, we have a, at our local zoo, which is called Hogle Zoo. I know, it's just stupid. Anyway, it's down Salt Lake.
I like that name. That's pretty cool.
There's a weird thing that you walk through to look out portal holes on the side to see monkeys doing stuff, and it looks like that.
such as, what would these monkeys be doing, Scott?
Mating, throwing poo, and pushing their fleshy red butts up on the glass. Those three things. That's the life of a monkey, Brian.
What I'm doing now.
I rather like that memorial, and it's not an uncommon design. Like, the whole point of it is to act as a place where people can stand and look down into the waters and see this huge ugly ship down right. there.
Yeah.
And you have to have it's a bridge, right? You have to be able to stand out on it.
Sure.
And then I think it's cool because it sags,
right?
And like, it's designed to sag, and it has so. You get this real feeling of depression, like how a war is going to cause everyone to kind of shrink and sag.
Are there always that many Japanese people crawling all around to taking pictures in this film? Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Both times I've been to Pearl Harbor, I would say 90% of the tourists there were Japanese tourists.
Look what we did.
it's really the opposite. I've talked to some about what is that. In fact, I've asked quite a few people in Hawaii, why is that? That's so many Japanese there. And the fact is, you're talking about people for whom Imperial Japan is not even a memory. It's an artifact.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've grown up. They've lived all their lives in reconstructed Japan, being told Imperial Japan was bad.
Yeah, it's like living in Germany and going, what was it like under Hitler? And you're like,
exactly. And what is every German school child subjected to? They have to go out and look at those concentration camps.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of what a lot of Japanese tourists are doing. Yeah. They're seeing what maybe their ancestors did, but they see their ancestors as wrong.
Yeah.
I just thought they were cheap because it's a lot cheaper to fly to Hawaii than all the way to America. I didn't.
Well, no, but Hawaii is America, but yes, it is.
Well, I know. All the way to mainland America is what I meant.
Like Hawaii is definitely a huge spot for Japanese tourists because they can get there in 6 hours instead of having, to go 12. Well,
and citizens. I mean, there's plenty of Japanese Americans that live there. But here's I just want to just frame this for a second. So, our grandparents' generation weren't uncomfortable occupying the same mall as a Japanese person.
Right.
They were demonized to the point of disgust by a lot of people. My grandparents, my grandfather specifically, was calling them damn Japs until he died in the 90s. And so it for them, that weird sort of thing still existed. For me, I love the Japanese. I like their cars. I like their games. I like their everything. Bring it on, right?
Food.
Their sushi.
Exactly. And I found it really hard in this movie to kind of put my mind in the frame of mind to go, ooh, you dirty Japanese, we need to blow them out of the air.
Right, right, because we don't have the context. Now, I would like to jump forward then to 2011. One day, here's what you'll see, dude. One day, we're all going to be old farts, okay? We're going to be in our 80s. And we're going to be milling around the Twin Towers Memorial.
Yeah.
And we're going to see a bunch of... I'm saying that this is a probable outcome. I'm not saying I have any reason to... we're not going to get too deep into why or how it'll happen. Because who the hell knows? My grandpa had no idea how Japanese cars were everywhere and we were building them in the States by the time he died. That seemed crazy to him, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine us walking around there and nothing, just surrounded by Arab tourists with their cameras. Mm-hmm. Snip, snip, snap. And us going, damn, freaking Towelhead or something.
Right,
and all our kids are like, eh, what are you talking about? And them having a culture of like, oh, yeah, we gave them that was our grandparents. We don't know what they were doing in the Middle East. That was crazy back then. And it'll be some new enemy somewhere. There's something about that actually gives me a little hope in the world. Because you go from, Japan, what they did in Pearl Harbor was on par with what we felt was done to us in 2011, or sure. one, rather.
2001, yeah.
Right. 2011, it was, that was rough.
Well, but, I just want to, I have to back you up here. I realize that everybody who has been around some older Caucasian types knows somebody old who carried a grudge with Imperial Japan to their graves. I just want to point out, if you've never heard of the Hawaiian 442nd Infantry Regiment, look it up, the 442. In World War II, a regiment of almost entirely Japanese-American men enlisted in Hawaii and became a regimental combat team. They were a group of 3,800 soldiers. They called for only 1,500 from Hawaii and 3,000 from the mainland, and they got 10,000 enlistees in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
And that regiment, the 442, went to Europe as a part of the United States Army and did some really amazing things. It's worth reading up on. There are a lot of older people in the United States who remember that, who remember them going after the Lost Battalion and so forth.
Of course. The thing is, though, I mean, and this Ken Burns documentary, The War, chronicles a huge part of that documentary. Mm-hmm. is about those guys. And they have one of the main commentators is a veteran of that war and a senator and all this stuff. And it is. It's totally amazing. But that didn't stop us as a nation from setting up internment camps. In fact, we had one right here in beautiful, you know, sunny Utah. And in fact, here's a Utah connection for you. George Takei grew up in an internment camp in my state. Woohoo!
Nice.
Isn't that crazy? But yeah, my point is, it's like, if you were there for Pearl Harbor, yeah, you. The same way goes for. I have Arab American friends who I think are awesome, and I know many who joined the army right after 9/11. It's kind of the same thing, but there's gonna be some crusty old turd. There're gonna be plenty of crusty old turds. Trust me, in 50 years, who still hate Arabs, regardless of the state of the world. Then they're gonna hate them, and there's gonna be a bunch of them like me and you who go, "Eh, they're fine." I had neighbors my whole life. They were Arab, and
it's not the right. It's not a generalization against the people. It's a general. Sure. It's a focus on the specific people who committed that crime.
Right.
So to understand this movie, what you want to try to understand is the mindset of the average Navy man in 1980, mm-hmm. and to them, I think their attitude about everything is very accurately portrayed. It's very well portrayed.
Yeah.
They're not portrayed as being a bunch of crazy war hounds that are on the scent for blood. They're in their first encounters with actual Japanese pilots flying around who are doing some pretty heinous things. They're kind of held back and everything.
Yeah.
But they're still quite willing to take out the entire Japanese fleet.
Sure.
And you know what? They missed a great opportunity here. There's a couple big missed opportunities in this movie, in my opinion. But one of them, and if this movie was being redone today, you got to bet there would be a Japanese-American officer on the bridge who is torn between,
all right,
you know, my grandfather or my father was you know, one of the pilots in Pearl Harbor or, you know, something like that.
We get sitting with Talking Bull.
Yeah, I know. Right. We get the Indian to make fun of.
What?
Right. And there are already so many perfect coincidences in this film that I imagine if they'd crammed another one in, it would have fallen over from the weight. Like the perfect coincidence of just when you're just about to attack the Japanese fleet, like you are in the air, that's when we find the anomaly again. Like the coincidences are really rough already.
Well, they don't ever explain what caused that. So to me, it's like, what was the final point? Most likely something wanted us to observe and be put in a situation where we learn something. And it's kind of I got a very Star Trek vibe from this, and I feel like we were supposed to learn something as people in this movie, and I think that was the final point. Really, was we learned something? I don't know what that was.
They should have called it the final point. Yeah.
The final points.
I was thinking kind of a Quantum Leap kind of thing, where, you know, again, same kind of thing, where you've got this opportunity to go back and change history. Do you do it? Do you, you know?
Yeah,
exactly.
But it's really more about the decision, do we do it, than the actual action, do we do it, which is unfortunate, because I think I really wanted that payoff, or I wanted them to make the decision one way or the other, mm-hmm. And have it go through and not have it all of a sudden, water got splashed on the fire. Okay, well, we don't have to decide whether or not we save the dog.
And instead it was just the Ferrantino twist, which everybody saw coming 6 miles away. You knew that he was going to get stuck. Oh, what happened? Oh, he's got to be that shadowy figure in the damn limo. Mm-hmm. There he was, with bad makeup.
I actually didn't see that coming from far away because I forgot about it. That first scene was so – it wasn't – I don't know.
Randy was still making popcorn at that time. He's walking in and out. What's going on?
No, I saw the scene. I got the twist at the end with the horrible old man makeup, but I just didn't – when I first saw the first scene, it didn't attach itself to my short-term memory. It wasn't that great a scene.
No.
Right.
It was kind of ominous, though. Like, who's talking to Charlie Sheen in the car?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when's that going to come up again? And why do we give a rat's a? And why is it so nefarious and creepy and sneaky? Like, why isn't it just a dude in a car going, you know, roll down the window and go, farewell, Mr. Lasky. Good luck on the show. You know, like, I don't understand. It was a weird thing to leave hanging and then have it pay off like that was equally weird.
Oh, he doesn't want to see you. He doesn't want you to get in the car or get out of the car or anything. He just wants to make sure you leave.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Thanks.
Maybe the deal was that you could, maybe the timeline is disrupted if it all doesn't go through as planned. And then when you get back, now we can hang out because somehow we've stayed away from all other living human beings for that long.
The last 40 years.
Yeah.
I just had this great idea that since the first anomaly took them backwards in time 39 years, that the next one, like when they go through it again, they're like, oh no, now we're back another 39 years. And then like they keep going through it. They take on the Spanish Armada and then they go through it. And they shell ancient Egypt and like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier, by the way, I misspoke. The Michael Douglas role, or he was going to be the role of Martin Sheen, he couldn't because of the China syndrome, not because of that other one I said.
Andromeda Strain.
Yeah, I always get those two mixed up. It's basically the same to me for some reason in my head. I know they're not. But,
yeah, I can't see that.
So there's that. what else? Let's just get to the dirty secret about this film. Martin Sheen looks just like Rob Blagojevich when he was young. Just throwing that out. He looks like shamed senator, or not senator, Governor Blagojevich.
Oh, I can see that.
Would be senator.
I want a shirt that says Air Boss.
Yeah,
that's
right.
All I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I just want a shirt that says that.
Yeah.
Right. And then what was the one next to it? Didn't it say Little Air Boss?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And I'm like, that was awesome.
That was weird.
Right.
I like that, though. You're right. That'd be a great t-shirt. And I noticed something else about this movie. Like all movies that we seem to cover on Film Sack that are set somewhere between 1978 and 1983, that range seems to take them between 16 and 20 minutes to do anything.
Right.
In movies. Yeah, and I don't know what that is. It's the slow start in movies from that time is a head scratcher for me, because I don't know when it ever seemed like a good idea to have that much. It's not even talking or setup. It's just dude walking.
I think they were in cahoots with the movie theater houses and trying to get you to go buy popcorn. It's like, well, nothing's happening. Let's go get some popcorn.
I guess.
You want some soda? How about some Jojo Beats?
I mean, sometimes you do that for suspense. Like you could say the original Alien film is all about suspense before people start dying. And I can accept it there because that's that whole trope. I mean, that whole thing's a trope. But the way it works in these other movies, like this would never happen today. I guarantee what it would be today is a lot shorter. Just imagine this movie being made today. I just think they get to the business of time travel way quicker than they do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you watch them. I'm sure that the directors, I'm just guessing here. I don't know if directors had the ability to do a director's cut as much as they do now. And if you watch any director's cut of any movie, they talk about, you know, well, this is the full thing that we wanted to show you. This is the boring, long crap that we wanted to show you. And we had to cut this scene because of time constraints and this scene because of time constraints. And I don't think they cut stuff like that back then. I think they just put it all in. It's like, we filmed it. We're going to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of the problem I have with Two Towers. But anyway.
No. Yeah,
director's cut. I think Two Towers is fine as a film. So director's cut is way padded out.
By the way, just went real quick rundown of 1984 in case we were all wondering. Yes, Beverly Hills Cop, Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, Gremlins, The Karate Kid, Police Academy, Footloose, Romancing Stone, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and Splash.
Wow.
And all a Van Halen album.
Oh, yeah. 1984. When they introduced some freaking synths and everybody went, oh, I don't know about this. Oh,
it's time to take it a little faster.
I hear their new album's good, though. Who told me that? Was it you, Ibbett?
Was it me?
Someone told me the new album's really good, like a really good, pure Van Halen, back to the roots kind of sound to it.
I'm not terribly impressed with it. But
really?
That's just me.
I kind of want to check it, just see.
No.
I can't take David Lee Roth as, he looks like a bird right now. I can't do it.
He looks like a bird.
He does look like a bird.
I don't even know what that means.
A bald bird. So, I don't know.
That's beautiful.
The movie is montage hell. It's just constant montages going on. Charles,
well, that's because they had all these actors, and then they had everybody that was on board the ship that they kind of that were real military people that they said were actors. I guess.
Here's a question for you, and I don't know if we can answer this technically or not. And I'm sure listeners will pipe in, but can you really hold a dude up with a flare gun? Can you take them hostage with flare guns? Is that a thing where if you point it to his back and say, all right, totally. Do what I say, and Can't they just turn around and go, dude, it's a flare gun?
I'm just saying. I'm saying you can hold me up with a flare gun easily.
Exactly.
I do not want to be shot with a flare.
Well, it's because we don't. Because we don't know. Well, I don't. I just. I'm saying that I've seen. Okay, I've seen a movie, and you guys try to. Maybe you can help me remember what movie it was. But isn't there a movie where a dude gets shot in the mouth with a flare gun?
Oh, that's like a trope. That happens so often. What, are you kidding me?
I know it. And they blew up his locker in the breakfast right. club, but I don't know about shot in the mouth.
But it's led us to believe it's kind of like that thing we talked about, Tango and Cash, where police business, I'm taking your car, that whole thing, which never happens right. to people in real life. Has anyone really ever been shot with a flare gun? And if they have, is it just like swatting away a Roman candle or something? I mean,
oh, look, yeah, I'm thinking
it's like a
flare gun to the face. Yeah. Let's see what it says on Google. So, yeah, that actually popped up. I just typed in flare gun, and then it said flare gun to the face.
Did
to
it really?
The face is one of the yeah. recommended searches.
Right, exactly.
Awesome.
That's great.
Wife shot. Yeah, wife shot with flare gun. Husband charged. Flare gun to face. Survivalist forum. Okay, so that's how you survive getting shot.
LiveLeak.com has, if you do a video search, there's actually some video examples, some stuff on YouTube, people getting shot.
Nice.
And there's, I don't know. It just seems like it's a thing that shouldn't be. You well, got fat understand. Charles Durning in his freaking yeah. swimming trunks and a bad robe, way too short for him, with a flare gun. Is it that big of a threat that our best and brightest military officers are all just going to go, okay, drop your guns. Everybody's got a freaking flare gun.
Right.
That
right.
seems ridiculous to me.
It does. There's more than one person. I mean, you would definitely wouldn't just drop your gun like that. But did the helicopter explode like that from a flare gun? I mean, yeah, wow.
I don't know. That was
weird. Did they have the gas containers inside the helicopter?
Well, they totally cut so fast that I wasn't right. sure what happened.
Both the helicopter and the yacht were mm-hmm. laden with thousands of pounds of gasoline.
Right, right, exactly. The yacht too, because that's back what I was thinking.
So, right, the yacht was fueled for a circumnavigation of the globe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It totally burst into flames.
That's the other guy we never got any real conclusion on, was the old fart on the yacht.
Oh yeah, one who got shot.
They got
the,
shot. Yeah. That whole time I'm thinking,
such a
convenient way for them to wrap everything almost back up the way it was at the beginning of the movie, right? Like, mm-hmm. all right, Charles Durning, oh, he's alive. All right, well, what kind of changes? Ooh, you know, running mate for Roosevelt. Excellent. Oh, blew himself up in a helicopter with a flare gun.
Yeah. Like
yeah.
It's,
yeah.
You know, it's just too neat and tidy.
It was like, very neat and tidy. And that way the timeline can continue, except for they got stuck on the island.
Mm-hmm.
But did no one ever notice that? How'd right. they get Here's, off? Who right. asked questions?
How do you get a driver's license when you haven't been born yet?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a. I guess that's where you get a limo. And how do you get money for a limo?
And how did they get loaded suddenly? They're just two well, military people.
No, they got
people.
Loaded. They got loaded over 35 years of knowing that
stock market.
Yeah.
Oh, because they could watch like Japanese stocks and not. Or whatever.
Right.
They,
was, yeah. I guess he was kind of a historian, right? Where, you know, he probably knew, you know, like every horse that won the Kentucky Derby. And
But right. But in his case, okay, yeah, because they came. That's right, because they came from the future, so they knew what was. They could just invest in Apple stock.
He came from the future.
Or he did. She didn't. Right, right. She was just there to look pretty and give him.
Apple stock. Hoo-ha! That's funny. You go for Apple stock.
She was there for the Hummer. That's terrible. What am I saying? What else? You guys got anything else? What I loved it. I kind of loved it. I kind of thought it was fun. Yeah. There's problems. Some of it deals with the age of the film. Some of it not. But I don't know. I just kind of went away from it going, yeah, you know what? That was a pretty damn good movie. And it was one of those that I think at the time, if I'd have seen it and I was older, I would have thought, oh, what a cool. I'm so glad movies like this can get made. Like it isn't right. just the formula of, you know, car crash, big middle. And happy
exactly.
ending.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably a pretty big risk at the time, being sci-fi during the 80s, just a few years after the great Star Trek 1 movie.
Well,
it was just so fantastic.
But don't forget, I mean, Star Wars, you know, Empire Strikes Back was a year later than this, and, you know, that was all going on. But that was such a different thing. I don't know. I just feel like I feel like we're lucky to kind of have it. It feels like an interesting movie that does hold up well, and
yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Know why. I still maintain that Martin Sheen's job. Martin Sheen, what's the point of his character? There is no point. He just sat around going, "Yeah, you know what I think." Blap, 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 and then they walk out of the room. He did nothing for the movie at all.
Not a right. thing.
Yeah,
it was. I tried to keep.
He's a trope.
Also,
yeah, he's a living, moving, breathing trope. You mean he's the civilian expert who comes on?
Yeah,
he's the Alec
guy.
Baldwin.
The Outsider, the
Red October.
Red October.
He's the Alec Baldwin of the Red October.
I know, but I like the idea that we refer to him as the Red October.
He's the Kelly McGillis character in Top Gun. He's the he's the civilian that has no business being there and is explained by the screenwriter.
And everyone resents him.
And
supposedly so it's his perspective that we're supposed to relate to, because we would be the foreigners
Right.
On the ship. We would be the ones unfamiliar with how the military works.
Link to the audience, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I don't think we needed him here. He was okay.
He's the nosy bastard who just can't keep out of Ferentino's stuff.
Oh, Ferentino, real quick. I'm a fan. I like Ferentino. He was the dad on Wonder Years.
Yep.
As
soon as I saw, I was like, wow, it's Skinny Dad, Skinny Wonder Years Dad.
And then you hear a voice go, and that was the last time my dad and I went and played softball that summer.
Right.
But he is just, in his day when he was playing movies like this, where he was kind of action-y guy and buff and whatever, kind of cool looking dude. I could totally get behind an actor like that.
Yeah.
I liked him a lot.
Very good actor.
Oh, and also the Japanese soldier that went crazy and just kept murdering people.
Oh, my. He was in everything during the 80s.
He was in MASH. He was that great character on a specific MASH episode, if you guys remember it. He was a North Korean doctor who knew English and had trained in the States, but was back in Korea now fighting for the North. And he and Hawkeye end up somehow together in a hut or something, and he's injured. And they kind of learn that the enemy isn't always the enemy, and it's,
it's the enemy mine episode of MASH.
Yes. Where's Lou Gossett Jr. when you need him?
Did you guys catch the massive plot hole with him?
No.
Just such a ridiculous plot hole with that Japanese pilot. So this is a warship. This is a huge warship from 1980 that knows exactly what goes down in 1941. Finds itself in 1941. Captures one of the enemy, and he's not in handcuffs. Ever.
They've
got
weird.
Him sitting around where he can grab a gun.
Like a
and
damn tourist,
people.
Yeah. He's just this wandering around. Yeah, that was
a
weird.
Modern naval vessel.
The way I saw it is they got soft. Like we haven't had a major world conflict that involved combat really since, Vietnam.
Yes. Okay. So they were 7 years.
Like they were soft, and they were just It's all Cold War.
Ruined the Navy.
Right. It's completely ruined the Navy. But I've heard people say that about. I keep going back to 9/11. But a lot of people are like, we weren't fit and ready for such an attack, which I kind of think is bullcrap. They got in and saw a hole and went for it. But a lot of people have said, well, no, the problem is we weren't, because we haven't had the constantly be faced with this imminent danger. We were not prepared for the breach. And this is, I think, a bit of that where they're, well, no, we love the Japanese. Got a guy on board that speaks it and it's an awesome place. And man, I sure love their weird anime movies and their tentacle rape and all that stuff's really good. But
I will bet you there has never been a case where an enemy has been able to get a gun on a U.S. naval vessel.
Yeah, you're not
wrong. In history, going back to the 19th century.
Yeah.
I bet there has never been an enemy brought onto a vessel who was able to get a gun and shoot people.
Yeah. Same with any sheens. They don't allow any sheens on vessels either.
Nope. Yeah. Sheens are not allowed.
Yeah, so that was totally unrealistic.
So just looking at James Ferentino's bio, he died about 2 weeks ago.
Barely. I heard about this. Yep.
Yeah.
It's too bad. Oh, Brian, you were going to point out who's the worst photo of the week. Who do we have?
Our worst photo this week.
I love this. This is my favorite new segment of the show, by the way.
Mine too, yeah.
So. Right. Well, first of the earlobe scared me, but that wasn't really his main photo from Kirk Douglas. But
who was the guy? You told me somebody.
I'm going with Lloyd Kaufman of Trauma. I don't know if you've ever watched any The Toxic Avengers, but he looks like a basketball announcer or something in his photo. It's really weird.
I think that if Penn State really wants to go to the next thing, March Madness. Yeah, it looks like a total dude.
He's even better in like the fourth photo over.
Yeah, what is that lady?
Fifth or sixth photo over.
Where he's fucking Adele? Oh.
No.
Oh, yeah.
That's not Adele.
With Fred Williamson?
The one where he's got three guys sitting around him.
Oh.
And green and white striped tie.
Hold on, let me see.
And he's in one photo with Fred Williamson, who's a longtime film sacky.
Oh, yeah, the guy with the tie and the pants, or the shot with the tie and the pants where he's kind of aiming at the dude's lanyard. Is that the photo?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
one's great. Okay, yep, he wins. He wins for the week. Good job. I like this. Brian, basically what Dunaway does, so listeners who have not heard the show before, he's going to, each and every week, we'll find the worst IMDb photo for whatever actor is in the movie. And he played the Avenger. He played the toxic Avenger himself, right? He's the guy in this face and suit.
I don't think he's in the suit. I think he was just in the... The Toxic Avenger is just the best known of the Trauma franchise.
Oh, also he's 84, just, by the way. 84,
yeah, and he's just doing a lot. I mean, if you look at his what he's done recently, he's done like 20 movies that are either completed post-production or filming, and he's just crazy busy, and you think he's just awesome, and then you realize they're all Trauma movies, which is fine, but they're really low-budget films that – most of them never even see the light of day. So.
Yeah, I was wrong. It's Mitch Cohen who played the Toxic Avenger, and the last thing he did was
the Toxic Avenger.
Well, he had a role. He had a role in Clerks, which was not significant, and then Citizen Toxy, the Toxic Avenger 4.
Citizen Toxy.
Yes. Yes.
Citizen Toxy.
Yeah. He was.
Yes. It surprises me how many Trauma films I was able to see living in Austin and going to the Alamo Draft House regularly.
Oh right, yeah, it's right. all about that mm-hmm. stuff, aren't they? It's all about yeah. genre yeah. stuff. It's wall of shame. I've never seen Toxic Avenger. So
you
wow,
don't
really?
Nope. Yeah, we need to for the show if we can.
Don't
get
hurt yourself. Don't hurt yourself. Don't get in no hurry.
I know you're the one saying you think it's just terrible on all counts. It's not even so bad. It's good, right?
To me, it's not even so bad. It's good. It's just like, oh wow, this is just hard to watch. It's painful. But I know I'm going to say that, and there's going to be a lot of people that's going to go, I love those movies.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's you. That's fine. I love you.
That's you.
You stay you uh-huh. always.
Yeah,
but for me, it makes me want to throw up, and when I watch, I'm like, "Oh God,
really that bad?" All right, well, let's get on the list then, because I want to hear Brian gag on the show. All right, well, let's get to some clips. We have many of them. Well, not that many, but you know, a few. Let's play a few of them now. These are clips taken straight from the film. Let's start with everyone yelling in the opening sequence.
Mr. Lasky, I'm Commander Dan Thurman, Executive Officer. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I don't know. The whole first 10 minutes was a lot of that, just going, "Hey." This part of the ship is where we make a young, supple gay men, and then you move into the steam thing, and it's just constantly yelling over machinery.
Over here we have loud noises, right. And over here we have planes.
Yeah.
That's where. The whole thing.
Don't know why supple gay men came to my mind, but
I don't either.
Like whatever. here is the efficiency expert.
I hear you're on assignment from Tideman Industries to the Defense Department, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
What is your job, Mr. Lasky?
I'm a systems analyst.
Oh, efficiency expert, right?
Yeah, you could say that.
Clever dialogue.
They
clever.
Call me. That's about as funny as they try to get in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
They
yeah, never, it's not a very funny yeah, movie.
It's not no. a lot of jokes.
There's
one later that happens during the Japanese guy's massacre of all the soldiers that is kind of trying to be funny, which caught me as a strange time to bring your comedy in, but I'll play that clip soon. It's weird. It's weird that they put it in at all. Let's see. Privacy is more important on the ship. Oh, so he busts into a Wonder Years guy's apartment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And looks at all of his stuff, and then he gets accosted.
Well, Mr. Lasky, the one thing we cherish aboard a ship is privacy. Maybe it's because we get so damn little of it.
I understand. I hope you forgive me.
Is that that's a bit of a trope about how it's all close quarters in the Navy, but right. maybe it's not a trope.
Well, no,
the
it's
trope
not.
Is,
but it's,
as soon as you start looking through somebody's stuff, they're going to show up.
Right. That's the trope. And of course, the guy comes in and he's like, "Whoa, you're looking through my stuff," and it's some really interesting stuff and a little bit personal. And then, but I'll get over it immediately.
Yeah.
Now that we're talking, oh no, it's cool.
I'm over
it's cool.
It.
You're just looking through my porn stash. Let's talk about something else.
They kind of made it sound like it was going to be this nefarious thing, like he was going to be hiding something, and it was going to be to the detriment of the ship. And
right.
It didn't turn out to be that way. He was as loyal as anybody.
Yep.
Nobody was like bad, and the Japanese guy was comically bad, just because he's from the 40s and he's currently on a suicide mission to destroy all Americans, mm-hmm. And now he's thrust into this sort of like, hey, it's the 80s. What's wrong? You know, but everybody else is pretty, you know, yeah, whatever. Except the one black dude that just kept getting all hot and bothered. I have some clips of him too, but he was always.
Everybody lost their mind in here.
He was constantly having a breakdown.
You could not deal with time travel at all. Which is funny because that was one of the things I had to complain about the movie was I was like, okay, so the higher ups had like 24 hours to process the fact they did went through time travel. But then they make an announcement to the people on the ship. Hello, people on the ship. Yeah, we're in 1940. We're about to attack the Japanese. Get your stuff ready. Let's go. Deal with it.
Yeah, imagine what, you know, Johnny Two-Shoes, who just got on the ship in their last port, is thinking.
What? What's going on? I want to go back to Ohio.
All
right, here's the privacy. Oh, no, I already did that. Let's see. Radios are garbled. I like this because the guy's voice is funny. This is awesome. Check it out.
Well, we know he's inbound, but we can't talk to him. His radios are garbled.
So then I captured this.
Garbled. 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 Garbled.
I can just play that all day.
Garbled. Saying garbled is garbled. Garbled.
Garbled. Garbled.
Garbled.
Let's see. Racism toward racism toward the Indian dude.
Sir, Black Cloud, you've been doing unauthorized rain dances again, huh?
Whoa! I missed that completely.
I just died laughing. I was like, "Really?" I was like, "Wow! Oh, that's bad."
Black Cloud, you've been doing Sergeant or whatever. You just called him Black Cloud. I hope it was his name.
I don't think so.
Jeez,
it's the new superhero in the.
that's right.
It's the latest Justice.
It's the latest Avenger. Yeah. Right. We got to go after Silver Surfer. It's that era, you know.
This whole Black Cloud. This whole movie made me wish for better action.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't a lot of it. I guess the Japanese pilot gets an M16 and starts shooting people, and there's a really tense moment when they're trying to figure out what to do with him. But
kind of poorly choreographed though, some of that.
I wanted some great action. This movie actually made me start looking forward to the new G.I. Joe film.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll admit it now, and I know everyone hates it, but I liked the first movie. I thought it was fun. And I get excited when I see the second one, and The Rock is in it, so what else do you want?
I was not offended by the first G.I. Joe. Let's face it, G.I. Joe was never a class act.
No, this needed to be stupid, and it delivered, and then it was also really action-packed and well-presented. And
I mean, that running scene with the suit, we don't even get into that.
Ah, dude. That was pretty good. But the trailer for that, when you got the freaking, what's his ninja?
The Rock.
Oh, yeah, but the dude, like, rappelling on a thing and throwing bombs at people on the thing and just, like,
right.
I don't even know what to think. I can't wait. I think it'll be
so great. Is Randy so in the park now?
Is he in the park? What?
Right.
Am I in the park?
What does that mean?
Every time Randy talks, I hear birds tweeting.
I'm sitting next to two open windows, and it's that time of day when all the birds get into the trees right outside, but the sun's still up.
I mean, I like it. It's very pleasant. I think you should keep playing.
Yeah, I like it actually too. It's a nice little ambient. I noticed it as well, but it was soothing me.
Having the windows open here is just amazing because we're just a few miles from Laguna Beach, and we're getting a nice ocean breeze, and it's cool.
Watch out for the time portal.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I got ice outside of my house, so I would much. That sounds much better than right
loser.
Now. I know. Yeah. Well, talk to me in mid-May. It'll be nice. Let's see. Garbled. Or I did it garbled.
Garbled.
Yes. One more time. funny voice dude calming men down. All right. Whatever that is.
Whatever it is, you'll be told. When? As soon as the skipper's ready.
As soon as the skipper's ready, you'll be told.
You'll be told. I'm military. I'm not actually an actor. Ladies,
whatever it is, you'll be told.
I really enjoyed Scott saying whatever it is, and then the guy saying whatever it is.
I know. I didn't mean to. All right. Here is Durning making moves on the secretary.
We swung it, Laurel. How about that? We really swung it.
Did you tell him you were sleeping with me?
What? Mm-hmm. Laurel, I wish I was. But I'm not going to lie about it.
Ugh.
Okay, so I totally misunderstood what I was hearing in that scene. I thought she was being serious, and he was saying that they are having an affair. I actually thought at first they were actually together, like she was his wife or something, but only he wasn't putting out. is how I heard it. And it took me a long time watching this film to realize, no, she's just his assistant or speechwriter or whatever she is.
Right.
I wish I was, but they haven't invented those little blue pills yet.
Oh, nice.
Not yet, anyway. Geez, I wonder if a ship could come by that's from the future and I could get on it and take people hostage with a damn flare gun in my robe.
Give me the blue pills. I heard about the blue pills. Give me.
4 hours later, boom, helicopter blows up. All right. How about not a euphemism?
We've got a green light.
door up, check the oil, and clean the windshield. Over.
All right, something about that just sounded like a euphemism.
Sounds like hey, it really hey. Does. It sounds like yeah. it sounds like an escort's dispatcher,
right?
telling her she has the green light to go on into her John's apartment.
Right, right, and then clean the windshield. So right. whatever that means. Okay, it's always the Russians. Another reminder, when we watch movies from this era, it's always going to be about the Russians.
Somebody, for some reason, wants us to believe that we're back in 1941. Now, who wants it?
The Russians.
Oh. Yeah, the Russians.
I love there's a guy back there who goes, oh, Jim.
It's always the Russians.
Always with the Russians, Jim.
You know who would love to see us in the 40s? The Russians. So
I love that that's the just the case with all this stuff in the Cold War. I it makes me look forward to more movies from the era so we can just listen to more stupid Russian blaming exactly. talk. I love it.
I miss the Russians.
Oh, it seems so serious then. My parents were so like, all the adults in my life were like, ugh, the Russians, nukes and blah, blah, blah. Even in the 80s, they were like that. Oh, yeah. And I just remember thinking,
with good reason. I mean, Russians were very scary for a
while. But they were only scary because they told us they were so scary. And I'm sure that they were probably on some level scary, but we are equally or more scary to them than they ever were to us. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this, what it's what parents tell their kids. That's what was scary.
More scared of us than we are of them.
I kind of think so.
Like a spider.
That's exactly right.
I mean, it
Cuban
was all
missile crisis.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was a big deal, sure. But and by the way, you guys ever seen what's it called? 9 days or whatever it's called with Kevin Costner and Bruce Dern, the other guy that we keep talking about, the guy that played Pike in the Star Trek movie. Can't think of his name all of a sudden.
Oh, Greenwood.
Greenwood, yeah, he plays Kennedy, and it is awesome. That's a great movie, and it
sounds good.
Yeah, it's really good. I think it's streaming. Maybe not. But anyway, I think it's called 9 days or 9 days later or something like that.
Oh, 9 days later.
Anyway, point is, yes, there are always big government things happening that are all scary and stuff. But as kids, we are being fed copious amounts of propaganda daily. And it's true of every generation. They do it now with, you know, the threat of the Middle East. When, you know, they can make a, I'm not going to say this. This always gets me in trouble, so I'm not going to do it. Never mind. Yeah, not going down that path. I always get emails for it. I'll save it for a...
When in doubt, encourage Scott to shut up. Follow that instinct.
Follow that instinct. Do not let me say certain things. All right. I did that one already. Let's see. How about this one?
Charlie.
Every time she went, Charlie, I wanted to punch the screen.
Charlie.
Yeah, shut up about the dog.
Charlie, thanks to you, 4 people are dead. Yay, Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie.
Right.
You effing dog.
Some angry acting. We always go for some angry acting. I always look for these. Yeah, go ahead.
Just want to ask, this dog fulfills dog trope.
Oh yeah, dog trope. Always dog trope.
Unnecessary unnecessary dog. Only one, I might add. Have you noticed? Dog trope is always a single dog. There may only be one dog in the world in tropey movies. And makes you wonder how they reproduce. Dog always survives.
Yeah.
Dog always knows how to survive some horrible crap, like a boat being blown up in the middle of the ocean. Dog is going to make it. And by the way, dog is friendly with everybody. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
Dog trope gets along.
Except for Japanese.
Yeah.
Yes. But I'm just saying, dog trope could totally win Miss Congeniality in every movie he's in.
I agree. In commemoration of dog trope, here's the sound of Scott Fletcher having his left testicle chewed on by a dog. Ready? Here we go. There you go. I like dog trope.
He's
That's
awfully
funny.
Calm.
I know. He's
right? Not too bad.
Trying to keep face. He's all right.
A little nibbling.
Here is some angry acting.
For Christ's sake, what is this? Some half-assed Princeton debating society. We are in a war situation.
We are in a non-acting school situation. That's right. He was terrible.
That guy reminded me of when they take regular people on you know, like TV shows and try to have them act.
Yeah.
And you realize that actors actually do something really magical.
Yeah.
that guy was the regular people in this.
This guy was in like things like Superfly and Red Dawn. And the TV show The Equalizer, just lots of big, tall, scary black guy roles.
So he just wasn't feeling it today.
Yeah.
This time.
Died, by the way, in 2004 at age 66. Oh,
Oh, man.
I'm sorry to hear that. And also, a guy that played Black Cloud, the Indian guy that got teased all the time.
Right.
His real name is Victor Mojica. Now, is Mojica a division? Is that a direct sort of rip down from Mohican as a race or a type or a tribe or whatever? That's interesting.
I assume so, yeah.
He's still around. He's not doing nothing, though. Last thing he did, 1994, Days of Our Lives. He played El Hombre. Oh, my gosh.
El Hombre. That's awesome.
The dude? Yeah. What?
You know you've made it.
That's really good.
Who's the dude? All right. Where the poop are we? Here we go. Here's the last one here. Or no, there's two more. This is the go to hell conversation, which I thought was pretty funny.
Go to hell, Lasky. Go to hell yourself. I want to meet Chaplin.
Yeah, go to hell yourself.
Yeah. No, you go. No, you go to hell.
My son's about to be in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and he's an a-hole. All right. Need a translator. Okay, so here's the part this is where they try to be funny in the worst scene where there shouldn't be any funny. Right.
The most inappropriate scene for humor.
Right. This would be like, I don't know what this is like. It's weird. It's 12 seconds. Check it out.
Can we get a translator?
How the hell do we know what he's saying?
Need a translator to tell him we need a translator.
There's blood everywhere. There's dead soldiers left and right.
Right.
The girl's got a gun to her head, and Martin Sheen says, "Ban-nat-nat-nat-nat." I'll be here all week.
Hey, Sheen, once again, inappropriate.
Your modern Navy, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep. Leave it to the outsider to think that's all real funny. That's it for clips. Nice work, clips.
Yeah, the modern Navy is kind of depicted like some dudes in an office.
Yeah.
They really are. They've got a executive vice president who makes ultimate decisions. You know, calls for general quarters. A bunch of office drones all complain bitterly and feel like they're not being told what to do.
They got a company cafeteria thing. Yeah. And yeah, no, you're not too wrong about that.
They have a jet coming in that can't lower its tail hook, and they call for a big team building exercise, and everybody runs out. You know, but
love that thing though. That big ass net.
Right. That was cool.
That was really cool. It's like, oh, I had no idea that's what you do if you got to
get a guy in during a storm or something. Sure,
yeah.
It was such perfect realism. They really got some great stuff. I wish that I had seen this in 1980. I would have been blown away.
Yeah, that's cool. I actually thought the net thing was to stop him from landing. I thought that was like a.
Let me ask you guys. I want to know: does everybody else around the table have the same experience I do, where the first time you watched Top Gun was also the first time you found out about how aircraft carriers work? Like that's
about
when you
how
learned
planes land on them. With
yeah,
the hooks.
When you yes. learned about tail hooks.
Oh, totally. The first time. Yeah.
You learned that they use a steam engine to yank the plane off the boat and this sort of thing.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah. Like Top Gun was that for me. And I can't help imagining that for another generation, this movie would have told them that information.
Yeah. I think for Brian Dunaway, it was Iron Eagle 3 that taught
it
him.
It was. That's how I learned.
I don't know why I picked 3, but.
Because I try to avoid these airplane movies. I'm not into them. So, yeah, I didn't watch Top Gun until we watched on here.
You avoid them? You don't like
I didn't watch this until. I don't know.
Really?
Not like a fighter. You mean just fighter plane stuff, right?
Fighter plane stuff, it just doesn't do it for me.
Really?
You didn't?
Weird.
Really?
You avoid them. That's weird.
I'm like, this movie's about fighter jet planes. No, I don't want to see it.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Wow.
You know what? That's kind of how Ibbot is about westerns. It's kind of how I am about, actually, what is that for me? I don't
musicals?
Know what it's. Oh, you know what?
Anime?
You know what? Actually, musicals do kind of fall in that category. I kind of go, oh, it's a musical, and I don't give it a chance.
I didn't watch any of the car movie or the race car movies. Like I've never seen Days of Thunder. Yeah.
See, that doesn't really interest me either. In fact, car racing generally doesn't interest me.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wonder if Brian Dunaway has an aversion to like going to air show.
That's interesting. Yeah, would you go to an air show and watch that?
I don't really care for that.
I wouldn't go to an air show because every time I see him on the news, something horrible happens.
It's always on the news, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I did see the race car movie where Sylvester Stallone is a driver and he picks up coins on the wheel of the car, on the tire of the car, whatever it is. But I only saw it once and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And then
I don't like it.
And I don't think Talladega Nights counts as a race car movie.
No. But what did the what was the movie with Steve McQueen? Was it Bullet or what? There was one where the car featured really heavily in it, and it's awesome. And it wasn't about racing necessarily, but it was kind of just a, the car had a big role to play.
Don't ask me.
Not quite like, yeah, you know, not like Knight Rider role, you know, where it's the key to the whole thing. But
I think we're saying that you're asking the wrong crowd here.
Maybe it's Bullet. Maybe it's Bullet.
The getaway. No, it's not the getaway.
Yes, it is the getaway. That's what I'm thinking of. The car had something to do with the getaway because they had to get away in the car.
It was the getaway car, but right. It was more about the crime and them getting away.
You're probably right. But that original one is great. The one with Charlie Sheen or with Alec Baldwin or
what? Alec Baldwin and King, what's her face?
Kim Basinger.
Basinger, yeah.
Isn't that where they met? They started bumping uglies?
I don't know. I think they were bumping uglies before that.
Gross.
I love that remake. I mean, I think James Woods is really, really good in that.
Yeah, we should watch that. Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of things you should watch. By the way, everyone quit emailing me. We know that Hard Target is on Netflix. It is on our list. It's coming. We know.
What else? There's a bunch of others. There's several that are on Netflix, and we're working on getting them onto the show. We keep getting told that they're on Netflix.
Yeah, they keep saying it, but they're coming. Don't worry. All right, award time. Go ahead.
I don't want to discourage recommendations because the recommendations are awesome. Like sometimes we find out about films that we really didn't know about.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I just mean, yeah, you know, because I talk about Hard Target like it's one of the greatest movies ever made, and I still believe it is. I absolutely freaking love it. It's my favorite John Woo movie, at least his American ones. But I guess I'm just saying, yes, I am aware. I am aware of every step Hard Target makes. Let me just say that. So I know it's on streaming. You don't have to tell me.
Right.
Hooray for Hollywood time. All right, let's give some awards out. It's award time, and this film earns the following FilmSack awards given to it by the FilmSack Award Committee. I made that all up.
Wow. Aww.
The I Never Get Any Order or Older or Younger Award, Charles Durning. He gets that award. Yeah. He's perpetual age. Best Use of an Aircraft Carrier Silhouette Special Effect. This film runs away with it.
Yes.
Clear winner. The Better Than Top Gun Award. I kind of like it more than Top Gun.
Yeah.
Wow. No.
That blasphemous?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I'd like
a remake of this where they actually do something better than Top Gun.
Right. That's the whole point. Ultimately, this film does nothing except reveal who the guy in the limo was.
Yeah. Right. It's, I don't know, I'm torn.
That's enough for me.
I think it's pretty good.
We'll trade you Charles Durning's death for a guy on an island and a dog.
There you go. How about that? I'll trade you one Charles Durning in a bathrobe for one goose getting ejected and bumping his head. All right.
Hey, can someone bring me some fresh clothes? What's going on?
Yeah, make Charles Durning his wingman anytime. How about that? That'd be great. '80s Navy does not know how to handle their Japanese prisoner. Award clearly goes to this film. Here's some Star Trek connections. Ian Howarth is the composer. He did additional music and sound effects for movies 1 through 6 in the Star Trek films. So good job, Ian Howarth.
Very good. This music was very good.
I liked it, yeah. Douglas E. Wise was second assistant director in this film. He is also second assistant director on 5 of the first 6 movies, so 1 through 5. Thank you, Daryl, for sending those in. Those are your Star Trek connections. For the soundtrack grade, I would give it P for pretty epic for 1980. Thought it was pretty good.
Good orchestra type music a lot of times. Yeah,
it was a little on the nose sometimes, and a little too not patriotic, but too, I don't know. Like there weren't enough people in that orchestra. Like it was like half the size.
Right, right.
Were you hoping for more of the music from Stripes? The da 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 da.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love that. I miss that already. Can we just put that in all military themed films? Right,
yeah, I thought the music in this film was one of the weak spots. I didn't appreciate the music at all.
Well, this is what Sylvester Stallone says to you about that.
Coming up this week on FilmSack.
Sorry, that wasn't supposed to play. All right, that's your awards. That brings us to our Twitter post: 140 characters or less. You guys say what you think of this film. Let's start with Randy. What do you have?
The Final Countdown, a film about going back in time and changing Pearl Harbor where nothing changes. I want to go back in time and watch Top Gun.
Where everything changes.
I would like to point out I wrote that before we just had this little conversation.
Wow, just like barely before?
No, I wrote it earlier today.
Oh, all right. Well,
had this little conversation. It just happens that we were just... Top Gun came up.
You are a healthy dose of preparation. All right. Brian Dunaway, what do you got?
I'm writing mine right now. The final countdown. The only thing that could make this movie worse would be Tom Cruise. I hate Top Gun. I'm kidding.
Well, I'm starting to get the impression you don't like Top Gun very much.
There's a reason why I didn't watch it for so many years.
Yeah, but it has Tom Skerritt in there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude.
I like Tom
Did you guys Skerritt. Hear Chekhov on during the filming of this movie
what?
When they were doing the Russian guy and they were listening to the Russian sub guy?
It was a little bit of the Chekhov-y sound?
Sounded very Chekhov-y.
Oh, all right. You called
something I did hear the guy whistling as he talked. Captain Sean the Bridge.
Oh my God! If they told me one more time,
popsicles.
They can't. Nice.
Yeah, he was lispy as hell. Yeah, he's the worst guy to have do that.
Totally.
Like, who are you gonna have to say the captain's on the bridge every time? I want you to hire Whistler Phil over there in the corner,
right? Captain's on the bridge. Captain's leaving the bridge. It's like, we get it.
Also, I would hate being in the Navy if really they do have that weird whistle that's always going off every time anyone does anything.
Ugh. Yeah, they do. No, that's a real thing.
That's annoying. Yeah. That's a very annoying.
Is it different songs, different tunes for different events? Like,
yeah,
you know, like, oh, that means that there's a hot chick on the port side of the ship. Everybody go over there.
Yeah.
The ship's leaning. Everybody back.
I mean, they did that. It's always a naval thing, and they also did it in a lot of Star Trek. They had that weird whistle.
Right. The Star Trek whistle was a direct throw to the naval whistle.
Yeah, because in the end, Star Trek is basically a big naval show. Mm-hmm. It's the show. It is. It's a giant naval. It's like the end of Wrath of Khan or Wrath of Khan. I about said. That is
Wrath of
Khan. That whole thing is just a big naval battle, and it's brilliant as a result. I love that whole fight.
I have a Twitter post.
Yeah. Oh, let's get to Brian Ibbett. I forgot we didn't do you. Brian Ibbett, your Twitter post.
I wrote this earlier today, too, so it's kind of funny. The final countdown, it's a big navel. No, nice. I'm kidding. Here's my real Twitter post.
All right.
The final countdown, terrific buildup with a finish that's as overblown as a Japanese pilot flying with his cockpit open.
Oh, man. That's so true.
Wow.
Yeah, they were cockpit free.
Yes.
Man, that was a good... That was such a good scene,
though. You can't fly like that, can you?
Well, they were open, right? Weren't they open?
Yeah, they were wide open. He's looking around like, oh, what's going on with
that? Yeah, that altitude, it's no problem.
I see, but
don't you just get, like, wind just blowing your...
No, you have a windscreen.
Yeah, but what do you do when Indiana Jones is in the back going, snakes, Jacques, there's a snake in the plane. I hate him, Jacques, I hate him. What happens then? What do you do then?
You hold on to your hat.
No, I actually just look like to me like those planes never have a cockpit cover, and it seems like a long way from home.
Just seemed like they were slid back.
Yeah, I don't know. That was weird. I'm with you a bit. I think that's weird.
That's how they roll.
Like, why would you have it down? Like, oh, look, it's such a nice day, you guys. It's
so dirty. Nobody cleaned my windows before we took off. Dang it! I'm just gonna have to fly with them down.
We are going to do a strafing run on boat full of people, but it's such a nice day. That does seem weird. All right.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I learned while you let Charlie the dog have free reign on your damn ship. There sure were a lot of Japanese people on the Arizona Memorial, but we already sort of talked about that.
Yeah.
1980, the year we still use blinking lights to communicate with ships sailing next to us.
Mm-hmm. Still do
those
that.
Were good times. Do they do that now?
Yeah.
As a last resort, though, right? A resort. Because now they've got like tech and wireless.
Yes.
And,
sure. It's definitely, it's always been a last resort.
All right.
You'd much prefer just to pull up next to him and talk.
That's the way.
Hey, Phil. Pull up alongside him. Roll your window down.
There's a whistle for that. Hey, we're pulling up next to him. Time travel is loud.
Yes.
And electric.
God, yeah.
Painful.
It's like scanners or something. You guys you can make your Navy Air Force stuff look pretty awesome in 1980. And finally, time travel is loud.
My Twitter post was almost going to be like that Family Guy joke. Or oh, time travel happening. Ah,
yeah. Oh, you should have done that for like 10 minutes. Ten minutes.
Like these people, like, and then they all stand up and they're like, all right, okay, what happened?
Yeah. I like to think that was the time travel whistle. That just went off.
Right. Yeah.
It's just a little harsher than the others, a little higher range.
You ever notice that the weather's always better on the other side of time travel?
Yeah. Always. Yeah.
When they came out, it's like perfectly serene.
Oh,
like,
Brian, give me this. That's a trope from hell. That's such a trope. Yeah. That's always happening.
You don't time travel into a blizzard or a rainstorm. Right. Or something.
Yeah. That's too funny. All right. Well, a couple emails. Got one here from Tom Walter, man with two first names, who says, "Fellers." I don't know how I feel about that.
Hey, Tom Walter.
"I remember watching the Final Countdown as a kid, sitting on my granny's orange carpeted living room while sipping Tang through a crazy straw."
His family had some kind of orange fetish or something.
I don't know.
Didn't want to say, "If you spill the Tang, it's okay because the carpet is orange too."
Right. "Here, have some creamsicles while you're at it, sonny boy." Says, "I watched it again this week in anticipation for the upcoming film sack. I enjoyed it as much this time, albeit for different reasons, as I did then. Thank you for the memories, Tom Walter." I'm just picturing this kid. He's probably redheaded too in the orange house, orange house, grandma's house, right, with his little crazy. Remember crazy straws? Those were the bomb. Oh, yeah, loved them.
And he had to be wearing his astronaut helmet and his Spider-Man underoos because I'm telling you, man, drinking Tang, man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. Yeah,
he probably wanted to watch Super Friends, but that wasn't on. I mean, there's so many things I like about that time that.
You know how bad Tang is? Tang is so nasty.
It is.
Tang
really
is pretty gross, yeah. And it was never really astronaut food, right? Wasn't that all a bunch of crap?
That's a bunch of hooey.
Yeah, that seemed like a bunch of crap to me. Yeah. Got another email, one quick one here from, Rory, who makes a really good point about Die Hard. And he gives me a couple of quotes here, one from Die Hard, one from Tango and Cash. And I'll read the Die Hard one first. "Who's driving that car? Stevie Wonder?" That's from Die Hard. Tango and Cash. "Where did you learn to drive? Stevie Wonder."
Yeah. Nice.
Then he says, they even effed up stealing a joke from Die Hard, Rory. Yeah.
There's apparently only two blind guys in the world, Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles. That's
right.
It.
That's it.
No other blind people.
If you're gonna make in your movie, if you're gonna make a joke about a blind dude, there's your two choices. Who else are you gonna go, "Where'd you learn to drive? Marley Matlin."
Would you get Al Pacino?
She's deaf.
Woman?
I know she's deaf.
She's deaf. Yeah, okay.
She's deaf. But I couldn't. That's the point. I can't think of another.
There's only two blind guys in the room
working.
A new trope. We just invented a trope.
We did. It's a brand new one. So for that, we're gonna give it. Let's give it something new. Let's give it. I don't know.
Garbled.
How about garbled? Hold on. I like this guy here. Where is it? Hold up, Pitt. Here.
"Yeah, I got the place tighter than the Pope's poop chute."
All right, that'll have to work.
Wow, I like that.
That's all I could find. I still think that sounds like, what's his name?
Joe Pesci.
Exactly, it does.
But it's not. That's emails. Thank you guys for that. Our next film is Dragnet, the one with Tom Hanks and
Dan Aykroyd,
right.
And the Art of Noise. Woo!
Yep, pretty good Art of Noise track. I really
am giving you a prediction for enjoying the soundtrack to that one.
Yeah,
not
course.
Much else.
Yeah, that's about it. The Return of Dabney Coleman. He plays he's basically the Playboy auteur style dude in this. He's a porn magnet. Right.
Yeah.
And he's in it. And this is all from memory because I made a big deal about this movie. It came out right near the end of high school. Me and my friend Bill Evans bought tickets in advance. And back then you did that by going to a box office and paying for them days in advance, not just online somewhere.
Right on, Scott.
Yeah. We went in there. We had so much anticipation because we were huge Aykroyd fans and we are huge Tom Hanks fans. And we just love this idea that this old show is going to be made into this new modern, you know, version of this movie. And its closest analog would be things like the Beverly Hillbillies movie, which is good.
Right.
Brian adamantly disagrees with me on that. What's another one? There's other good examples of this.
McHale's Navy.
Shite. All those.
Adam's Family.
Right. Very good. Exactly. That is what this movie is. And unfortunately, my memory is that I walked away disappointed because it was really just a caricature of Dragnet.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure.
It's not a good, like, they were making fun of Dragnet.
Right.
And especially Dan Aykroyd's character. He's
right. Where like Mission Impossible is a caricature of Mission Impossible, but it's actually a good movie.
Yeah. It's I guess that disappoints me because I wanted a hard kind of crime thing. And for a while there, you had Papa Giorgio from Vegas Vacation and Ed O'Neill from Modern Family and, Married with Children. Right. And a great episode of Miami Vice, by the way. Anyway, that they made a modern day Dragnet not too many years ago, and I was really into it. It was a Dick Wolf joint, and it was fantastic. And it only lasted like 6 episodes because nobody gave a shit, which is really too bad because I thought it was great. It was really good, and that's what I wanted from this. But I, you know, whatever. It is what it is. I've gone on a rant. I will no longer talk about Dragnet. But that's happening next week. So tune in for the next film sack. Dragnet's the film, and it is currently on Netflix streaming and other streaming services. How do you guys feel about, just real quick before we get out of here, how do you guys feel about Comcast getting into the streaming business?
I'm all for it.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. I want there to be more and more streaming services before a big winner starts buying them all up and consolidating them.
Yeah.
Because that's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there can be only one BMG record club, and there can be only one winner streaming service. It's going to happen.
Were we all on that stupid club? We all were, right?
It's not even BMG anymore. It was
Columbia House.
That's the same thing. That the BMG Columbia merged. Columbia was the winner. That, you know, anyway.
That's where I got my favorite two tapes, because we were tapes when I was doing it, were Scorpions, the one with he had the forks on his eyes. What was that one called? It was the best Scorpions album, the famous one.
Yeah.
There's no one like you.
Right. With his face going through the glass window and he's got the forks in his eyes.
Yeah. Can't remember the name.
Now
I don't know it. How many free CDs did you finally get when you quit
CDs? I quit before there were CDs.
Yeah, wow. Mine were tapes.
I got vinyl.
Yeah, I quit when I was young. Vinyl. Vinyl.
I did. Yes, I, really? Have, I still have. I still have some of the Jack Wagner albums and whatever. You know, it was like
that's awesome.
I got Jack Wagner. I got who the hell? What else? It's like so much crap.
I love that though. Our Coverville friend had vinyl from freaking BMG, freaking Columbia House. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That's awesome.
It probably cost him more to ship those damn things in those big protective cardboard boxes, you know?
Was there ever a company in history that was more unprepared for the digital music revolution than them?
Yeah.
I mean, you could levy that against a lot of people in the music industry, but I swear Columbia House is the one that just really took it in the butt, you know? Like, their whole model just one's fail swoop, dead.
Yeah.
Anyway. There you have it. So, yeah, do this. Do this for me, people listening to the show. Go to filmsack.com. It's the website that we have all the shows on. The entire archive is there, plus notes, plus links to the forums, plus places you can suggest your own great movies for us to cover. Filmsack.com. The answer is yes, if you're asking yourselves right now, Scott, weren't you guys going to watch a live edition or something of some movie coming up that a fan sent you on DVD or Blu-ray? The answer is yes. We have a number of those to go through. We're going to get to those. Worry not. Fear not, my good friends.
They will happen.
Those will happen.
We will watch them enjoy them.
And they will hug them and hold them.
I'm really looking forward to that. We're going to have like a, I don't know, some sort of marathon or something of live film sacks. And those are my favorites.
Those are always fun.
Oh,
yep.
Mine too.
We're all on the couch together, virtual couch, watching our movies we bought for just a penny a piece if we sign up now.
Brian's a little handsy on that virtual couch too.
Yeah, that's true.
Only have to buy 14 more over the next 3 years. It's 3 years.
I know.
I got it. At regular price.
Oh, they're $40 a disc? Oh, that doesn't seem too bad.
Well, it's 3 years.
Sham.
It's a total sham. You can email us, filmsack@gmail.com. We'll read your email here if it's short and interesting, so send those in. You can find us on Twitter @FilmSack, and you can leave us a review on iTunes, because we love those. That will do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Randy's garbled a little bit.
Now I want to play Garble again. Where's Garbled?
Garbled.
Stand by. Affirmative. 1, 2, 3, May West. Hey, wait a minute. Those bastards are turning back. They're gonna strafe them in the water. Request permission to arm and fire. How dare you talk to me that way? They're gonna let the Japs do it again.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.